Porky, welcome back to yet another sparkling edition of On The Record.
Indeed.
It's been an incredible month so far.
Mm-hmm.
The weather's been amazing, right?
No,
weather's
not amazing for me.
What do you mean?
Bad for me.
Have you not got used to it?
I hate the hot weather.
Have
I can't
you not got
stand
used
it.
To
no,
it?
No, I can't sleep. I haven't slept for about 3 weeks.
I must admit, my sleep has been a bit disturbed.
I don't
have
like drinking in hot weather.
Have you not got any fans or anything like that?
Yeah, I've got fans and things all over the place.
Surely
but, I mean,
a man of your means, right, should be installing air conditioning.
Well, the problem with that is that, you know as well as I do from our times in New York, you have to put pipes out through the window and all that kind of bollocks.
Can
you know what I mean?
Can you not buy one of those units like you used to have in New York? Just
well,
stick it in the window.
No, because that involves, you know, woodwork and fitting it in and all that kind
but
of
you
stuff.
Get somebody to do that.
But anyway, the thing is, in my palatial like penthouse, I don't close the doors between each rooms because it's more or less open plan and all the light comes in.
Have you got windows only on one side though?
No, I've got windows on three sides, actually, yeah. But I don't want to close the doors because that stops the airflow and all that kind of stuff.
I have to leave my front door ajar if I want to create a draft, because in my place in London, the windows are only on one side. And,
I see,
and then the front door goes out into the corridor.
No, I've got Velux windows front and back, so I get an airflow through. But the problem is, for a lot of the time during the heat wave, there was no airflow. There was no breeze.
And the air was warm.
Hey, Porky.
Yeah.
How'd you like to get a free case of craft beer?
Oh, yes, please.
Yeah, well, not only can you get one for free, right, but our listeners can actually get one for free, because we'd like to thank you for listening to our podcast with Audio Boom with the help of our friends at beer52.com. What do you have to do?
Well, what you have to do is you just have to go to beer52.com /Mikes, M-I-K-E-S, to claim a free case.
Yeah.
Now, Beer 52 is the world's most popular monthly craft beer discovery club, searching out incredible and exclusive small batch craft beers from the world's greatest breweries and bringing them back for their members.
You know, I've already tried some of these, and some of them are really interesting.
Oh,
I
am.
You know, I've had coffee flavoured beer, I've had beer from Ireland, I've had beer from England, I've had beer from Scotland, other countries in Europe.
That's
all fantastic stuff, right?
All you've got
to do is visit www.beer52.com /Mikes, that's capital M, capital I, capital K, capital E, capital S.
That's right.
And claim your free case today.
That's absolutely right. And do you know what? Every month focuses on a new country or theme.
Yeah.
And if you sign up now, you'll get the chance to try a case of the best of British craft beers as part of their summer bangers selection for absolutely free, featuring the country's best craft beers, such as Northern Monk, Likely, Red Willow and Thornridge. And you'll be able to read all about the beers and learn more about how they are made in the 100-page Ferment magazine, which will be included in that lovely red and white box that arrives on your doorstep with the beers.
It is lovely. You can get themes including Californian beers, Norwegian beers, Belgian beers, which are very strong, by the way.
That's right.
It's all fantastic. As a listener to our show, you can try your first case for free. Just pay £2.95 postage. That's 8 incredible craft beers, Ferment magazine, and a snack delivered with free next day shipping. All you've got to do, visit www.beer52.com /mikes and claim your free case today.
That's right. And just let me remind you, there's no minimum commitment. You can just take the free case, try the beers and see what you think. If it's not for you, you can pause, cancel anytime. Beer 52 has a 5-star rating on Trustpilot, so it's very easy to see their members love the service.
They do.
Right, now then, so I meet you sometimes, right, before we go off to do a job, whether it's at Audio Boom or somewhere else and all that. We meet in a boozer and I
occasionally
buy 2 pints of summer ale and it costs £9.60.
Yeah.
Now, we should reflect on this more often.
Why?
How can the working man in London afford to buy beer at £4.80
a pint? Why are you suddenly worried about the working man in London?
Because I am a man of the people.
No, you're not.
And I am a working man. I'm a man of the people.
No.
I'm a man of the working classes.
Really?
Have been for
45 years. You're not a man of the working
45
classes. That's
years.
You're not working class.
No, but I mean, when I first started buying beer, right, when I was about sort of 15 or 16.
You were about 7.
No, not when I was 7. That was when I used to drink baby sham at weddings, family weddings, you know.
Do you know when I had my first sort of proper drink,
which
made me drunk?
Yeah.
It was when I went to Spain with European Press Golf Society.
Oh,
a guy you'll remember called John King.
John King, from
Bristol,
West Country,
Bristol man for the Express.
Yeah.
Norman Dixon, that whole crowd.
Yeah,
you know, my
parents. How old were you?
I was 14.
14?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I played in this golf tournament, Andalusia Plaza, down in the south of Spain.
Yeah.
And I was so good that I won the non-members thing, right?
Well done.
And I got so excited, and people decided it was a good time for me to start drinking, that they decided to give me sangria.
Oh, right, okay,
And I remember walking up
to the foul substance there.
Well, I don't, I mean, I drink it now occasionally if I'm in Spain.
Yeah.
But I remember walking up to get the trophy.
Yeah.
And literally, like one of those movies, you know, yeah. when they made those movies in the 70s, with yeah. everything sort of spinning.
That's right, spinning around.
I couldn't see what I was doing.
Trophy moving around, yeah.
They gave me this thing. I walked off the stage and kind of sank to my knees.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Because I couldn't walk.
No, sure, yeah. Well, I was much younger. I was about 12 when I went to a family wedding, and I saw a bottle of baby sham, and I thought, I'll open that.
Weren't they small bottles?
Yeah, tiny bottles, yeah, yeah. But I mean, when you're 12 and you have a baby sham, you think, that's great, I'll have another one, you know. And there we are. But anyway, so what I'm saying is, drinking wise, I remember working in the warehouse of a QuickSave supermarket.
Oh, yeah.
And my job was.
You had a lot of jobs, didn't you?
Yeah, I have a lot of jobs. Yeah, I've never stopped working all my life, you know.
Right.
And what happened was, when the delivery lorries arrived from the manufacturers and all that kind
did
of stuff.
Did you try and half inch a few bottles yourself?
Never at all, never at all.
I don't believe
that. But you had to take like 48 boxes of Sudzo, you know, off the back of the lorry and put it onto a rack and then wheel it in and.
There's no way you didn't nick some of this stuff.
No, I never nicked anything.
Are you sure?
Never nicked anything.
But you've always, every other job you've had, you've nicked stuff.
No.
When you worked in the Nottingham
pub. Can't nick stuff from a supermarket, anyway.
When you worked in the Nottingham pub, you claimed that you used to give yourself a quick half every now and again.
Well, what's wrong with that?
When you were driving the Wild White's lemonade lorry around.
Yeah, that's right,
You used to regularly exchange.
That was Corona, the Corona pop wagon.
You used to regularly exchange Corona.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
For other, you know, foodstuffs.
Beer.
And when you were doing your paper round, you used to flog off some of the stuff.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
I mean, so you can tell me you worked in a supermarket, you didn't steal.
No, I didn't know. You can't take out a packet of Daz, you know what I mean? Take it home for your mum. No, you can't.
Can't you pretend it got in damage or something?
No, nothing. But anyway, the point is, just down the street, it was called Brook Street, was a pub called the Bowling Green.
It is in Chester.
It was in Chester, and I was about 13 or 14, probably about 14, I would think. And a guy called Peter Kennedy, and I know that's his name because I bought some records off him of The Move. I like The Move. That's the road
Roy Wood's
going
old band.
There. That's right. Yeah. It's leading down to nowhere. And he played the slide guitar and all that. And this villain, Peter Kennedy, who's 2 years older than me.
Villain?
Yeah, well, you know, he took advantage of me because half my wages went on buying records off him. You know what I mean?
Was he a lot older than you then?
He's 2 years older than me. Okay. He was 16, I was 14.
Right.
So anyway, one lunchtime. We'd go out. We used to go to the KD, the Cardoma, which was a you know, a coffee shop. Because coffee bars are still big in those days. And meet his girlfriend, who was a waitress in the Cardoma.
Well, what about your girlfriend?
Well, I didn't have one. I was only 14.
Okay.
But she gave us free coffee and cake.
Okay.
See what I mean?
Right.
Because she worked there. And
was she older as well?
She was about 16 as well. So
did
anyway,
you fancy her?
Hey,
did you fancy her?
Oh yeah, absolutely did. Yeah, she was beautiful.
Right.
Yeah, she was the woman of my dreams.
Really?
Yeah, and that's been ever since.
Well,
yeah.
Didn't you try to pinch her from him?
Well, because I was only 14, he was 16.
This is not my kill, is it?
Smash me in the face or something, you know. So anyway, we're walking past the Bowling Green, and he says, "Come on, let's go in and have a pint." And I was like petrified.
Yeah.
I'd never been in a pub before.
Yeah.
So I said, "I said, no, you'll be all right." He said, "Come on." So he passed himself off as 16, no problem. We went in, and it was a very old-fashioned pub.
Didn't you have to be 18, though, to drink?
Oh, yeah, cool, but 16-year-olds are always... Everybody started drinking at 15, 16.
No, I mean,
16,
I was in pubs at 14.
Yeah, exactly,
after the sangria, stop. That was the beginning of the end.
Exactly. So what happened was... and it's a right, you know, sawdust and spittoon pub, honestly.
Right. Men only kind of place.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we're going back now some... Golly, 35 years or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so...
well, they were very much working men's pubs, weren't they?
Yeah, of course they were. So anyway, he walked in and he said, I'm going to sit over there. So I sat on this bench in the corner, you know, just literally staring into space and all that.
Yeah. Hoping not to be noticed, presumably.
Yeah, but they didn't care because, you know, Peter had gone up the bar, he bought 2 pints of lager and lime.
Yeah.
He said, this is the best drink you'll ever taste.
Yeah.
And on that hot summer afternoon, I have to admit, it was gorgeous.
I must
say,
on a hot day, a shandy is very good. I'm not sure so much lager and lime. But I remember those Top Deck cans you used to drink.
Top Deck?
It was like a can of drink, but it wasn't, technically it wasn't alcoholic.
Right.
But you could drink it when you were a teenager because you could be like Jack the Lad.
Yeah.
And it was called Limeade and Lager.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, was it?
And
I'm
pretty sure, I think it had, if it had any alcohol.
Yeah, I think I do, basically. But we used to buy bottles of Strongbow Cider from the local off license.
No, but this was like, I remember drinking this stuff.
When you were 12.
No, I remember drinking this stuff when we were at school. Because you'd walk, when I was at school at Holland Park, you'd walk up Holland Park Avenue.
Right.
And you'd go into the newsagents and you could buy this stuff in the newsagent.
Yeah.
And you could feel like Jack the Lad because it had lager on it, you know.
That's right.
But I don't think it actually had any strength or any kind.
No, I think it was about 2% lager or something, 3% lager or something like that. Yeah, but I do remember now. But we, my mate and I, Andy Wild and I, we used to go to We used to go to a local off-license, and it was called Dirty Bits.
Right.
And I've no idea why it was ever called Dirty Bits, right. But you went in there, and it was run by two very old women.
Yeah.
One who I think was the mother of the other.
Uh-huh.
But the older one was about 90, I'm not joking, and the younger one had no legs.
What?
She had no legs.
What do you mean she had no legs?
She was in a wheelchair.
Right.
And so she's...
Well, she'd had them amputated.
Yeah, yeah.
Blimey.
Yeah. So she sat behind the counter, and what we used to do is, used to go in there, and they'd have served anybody, and we used to buy, like, two large bottles of cider, one Strongbow and the other one the Woodpecker,
yes,
right?
I remember it.
And about six Aero bars.
Right.
Mint Aero bars. Aero. Yeah.
Did you like the orange ones as well?
Yeah, I like the orange.
I was keen on orange.
Yeah, mint was orange my favourite, you know. And then we'd go home, listen to a load of Beatles records, drink all this cider and eat all this chocolate and feel really quite ill, you know what I mean? But
I was living with my sister and my then girlfriend, who later became my wife, we lived in a place called King Henry's Road.
Yes.
In a Swiss cottage.
Right, yeah.
Around the back of the Holiday Inn.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
And where there was a shop about half a mile away.
Yeah.
Which sold cider and stuff like that. It was like a sort of... in fact, George Michael was found asleep outside it some years later.
Oh, right, OK, yeah.
And we used to have to, you know, collect as many coins as we could.
Yes.
Because we were all impoverished.
That's
You know, my sister was working... She got her first job in the city, which was all very much money.
Yeah.
My girlfriend was working in a pub.
Mm.
And I think I was working in Louis, the bakery.
Yeah, right, yeah, sure.
And we were all sort of in our early
20s. Yeah, yeah.
And we would get as much money together as we could. And then we'd draw straws as to who went to get the cider.
Right, okay.
And we've had it, in those days, if you could get something, I think it was like 56...
Surely you must have been younger than 20s.
We'd all finished university.
Oh, right, okay, yeah,
but
yeah.
we were living on our own, so we were paying for the apartment.
Yeah, I see, okay, yeah, yeah.
And we were sort of setting out in life. In fact, I think I was about to get my first job for this magazine.
Right, okay, yeah.
But I'm pretty sure that if we could get 56 pence together, you could buy a bottle of cider,
right,
you know,
okay,
like a litre bottle.
Yeah, yeah, sure, yeah.
Which was enough to get the three of us pissed.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
56p.
Yeah, yeah, no, I remember. So anyway, so then I started obviously drinking in my sixth form year at school. That was when I was 18.
Were you allowed to drink in the school?
No, but...
Didn't have like a common room?
No. There was no drinking in the school. But we had things like, you know, the annual football club dinner, which I was the star because I played in every game.
Well, I mean,
no
to be fair, for all of the bollocks that you've come out with about King's School Chester, there is a passage, is there not?
Yeah.
Which I think we've seen.
Yes.
In which you get sort of special mention.
Exactly. Absolutely.
For being the midfield dynamo.
Yeah. So we
hard as it may be for me to stomach.
That's right. So, yeah, exactly. So the King's School Chester, you know, Football Association dinner at the Dorchester of the North, the Grosvenor Hotel.
Oh,
right.
There.
Yeah.
God, that must have been a bad scene.
Yeah. And it was all dinner jackets and stuff, you know what I mean?
Right.
Because we were the King's Hill Chester.
Of course.
And you used to get completely pissed, and then Mr. Monday, who was the headmaster, would sit at the head of the table, who didn't drink, and we all got completely pissed and called him a fat wanker, you know, and all
Mr.
this kind
Monday.
Of stuff.
Charming.
And everybody was called into his office one by one on the Monday morning, you know, I will not have you glaring at me and expressing evil and foul language. Because he was like, you know, a sort of part-time vicar as well or something.
Was
you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I hope he wasn't like a dirty vicar previous podcast.
No, that's right. He was, in fact, a classics scholar from Cambridge University.
Mm.
And he used to take Latin lessons and wonder why I would stare at him blankly, you know, wondering why I couldn't do veni, vidi, venci and all that bollocks, you know. So, but,
veni, vidi, vici.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So anyway... Eventually, I got out of home and I went off to the University of the Trent.
Right.
So we settled into our digs in Harlaxton Drive.
Yeah.
My two mates, who were great mates, actually. I was very lucky to land in the place because you were just, you know, you just told where to go.
So you didn't know them before you met
them?
Didn't
know them. One was called Mick, one was called Simon. Became great friends, you know, no problem at all. We all clicked immediately.
Yeah.
We went down to the local boozer. And there were two. There was the 19th and 21st Lancers on one side of the roundabout, and on the other side was the Grove Hotel.
Right.
And of course, as we were students and penniless, well, actually, Simon was a multimillionaire who was an industrialist, but Mick and I were pretty
penniless.
Yeah, but
you still didn't have loads of money, as you've because your dad
money,
doesn't give you loads of money.
No. And so we go into the Grove Hotel to find that the beer in there is 11p a pint.
Mm.
And at the 21st and whatever, 19th and 21st, it was like 13 or 14p a pint.
Okay.
So we thought, this is our place. So quite genuinely, with a quid in your pocket, you could go in there and have six pints for 66p.
Blimey.
And still get sausage and chips. At the chip
I
shop.
I think you've mentioned this before.
On the hall, on the road back up to our digs.
Yeah.
All for a pound. Yeah. It was incredible. Right. It was absolutely incredible.
Which would now cost you, well, in London prices, yeah. you're talking, say, call it a fiver for a pint.
Yeah, 30 quid.
And that would cost you 30.
And so, fish and chips at least.
So that's 40. So that's a factor of 40.
Yeah, 11 or 12 pounds for the fish and chips,
of 40
by the way.
Yeah. At a time.
Yeah, right? Yeah, unbelievable.
I mean,
so,
I suppose lots of things have gone up by 20 times. I don't know about 40 times, though.
Well, I don't. You see, I can't work it out. Because if you work it out, the cost of beer in relation to something like a pint of milk, you know, sometimes you see these features in newspapers. Yeah. Oh, you know, what was it like last time England won a knockout game? Yeah. Oh, it was 1972. Right. Oh, what did beer cost then? Yeah, yeah. What did milk cost then? You look at it, and I go back and look at it.
What was number one?
Yeah. And in those days, if beer was 21p, a pint of milk was 12p.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's way out of proportion now, because a pint of milk is still only about, I don't know, 30p or something, 35p?
Well, 50 maybe, I don't know.
50p, but beer is 10 times as much.
Yeah.
It never used to be 10 times
as
much.
But then it depends
where you go. It used to be twice as much.
But it depends where you go. I mean, if you go outside of London, and you go, for example, down to Gosport, you know, the centre of criminality, you can probably get a pint down there for about 3.50, right? Probably.
Well, I can tell you this now. I go, even in Stockbroker Belt, I go to Wetherspoons.
Yeah. Well, that's about three something, isn't it?
Eh?
Isn't that about three something?
You can get Ruddles if you get it on the right day, a pint of Ruddles, which I like. I don't drink it as cheap.
Ruddles
I actually like the taste
beer.
Of Ruddles.
Yeah, I used to drink a lot of Ruddles.
£1.35.
Bloody hell.
£1.35. Well, that's what old Tim Martin does.
People go there all the time.
Tim Martin buys beer when it's apparently just getting its expiry date and all that.
In any of your trips to Wetherspoons lately, because I keep seeing these warnings that the CO2 crisis is hitting.
What a complete load
massively.
Of bollocks. Okay.
Well, a lot of restaurants and a lot of supermarkets have stopped selling certain things, like fizzy drinks and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't really drink fizzy drinks, so it doesn't affect me.
But I can tell you, there was a huge scare when England were having big nights in the football, which is still are, hopefully, and we're all going to run out of CO2. No, no way in the world. I spoke to a couple of my local landlords who said, no, it's bollocks, there's plenty of CO2 around, you know.
Really?
It's no problem at
all. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm led to believe that the beer business is looking after itself and getting plenty of CO2.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what isn't getting it, and that's the animal business.
The animal
because
business.
I was reading a story the other day that pigs are now being transported by lorry
not good.
From Scotland to Ashton-under-Lyme, which you know is near Manchester, because they can't be killed in Scotland because they haven't got any gas to kill them with.
No,
isn't that horrible?
It's terrible.
I mean, I don't want to even think about the way they gas them.
I wouldn't have done that story,
but I'd
have found that unsettling.
But they're now transporting these poor pigs in ghastly conditions in the back of a lorry and then killing them somewhere else.
I know, it's shocking, isn't
it? Well, so it's not right to say that the CO2 crisis is not hitting hard.
Well, it's not hitting the beer population, that's what I mean.
Well, that's as long as you're not affected by it, Porky.
Now,
that's the main thing.
Yeah. Now, just before we get off beer prices, right? What I think is inappropriate is for you to go around buying £15, £20 cocktails in an era when we are still having to watch our pennies. For me, you are a disgrace.
Bollocks. Anyway, how the hell can you have a go at me for spending 15 quid on something when you spend £3,000 on a pen and you spend £5,000 on a watch?
Well,
when everybody knows who the man of the people is in this particular little arrangement.
No, that's a completely different subject.
And I don't really drink that many cocktails anyway.
We are talking about the common man.
Yeah.
And we are talking about...
Fanfare for the common man.
Fanfare for the common man. And we are talking about how we must look after the artisans of this world, the working classes.
Well, you keep saying that.
Yeah.
You keep referring to people as artisans.
Yes.
I mean, what do you mean by that? Do you mean
well,
like
an artisan is a
butchers,
working man.
Bakers, candlestick makers?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I mean, people who have a profession and a trade. I mean, these days...
Well, an awful lot of people doing that in this country now are from foreign parts.
These days, you would describe a sky engineer who comes to your house to fix your phone and update your broadband and all that as an artisan.
I don't have an artisan to fix my phone.
Right, so...
You have that because you are... A wealthy person.
No, I'm not wealthy.
Yes, you are.
Well, why do only wealthy people get people to fix their phones? If your phone breaks,
you've
got to fucking fix it,
haven't you? What do you think ordinary people do? You think they just get on the phone to some bloke and go, come around and fix my phone,
man? Well, what do they do?
Well, they take the phone to a phone repair place.
No, I'm talking about an in-house phone.
An in-house phone?
The telephone line in your house.
What, you mean your actual broadband?
Yeah.
Well, then you get a BT engineer around.
Well, not if you don't have BT. If you have Sky, you get a Sky engineer around.
Well, everybody has had to have BT put their phone in, because only BT can.
No, rubbish. No.
Sky can't put a phone line in.
Sky, I have in one of my places, I have nothing but Sky.
How many places have you got?
In another one, it doesn't matter. In another one, I have only BT. So
you have got BT then?
I've got BT,
so
yeah.
So you've got several people you can call upon.
Yes.
And do you pay them when they come around?
I bet you tip them, don't you? Of course you
pay. I bet
pay.
You do the big I am.
No, all right, mate.
Here's a 20 for you. I bet you do.
I don't.
I bet you do.
Now, I want to tell you something which I found for one of my history journals, okay?
Yes.
In the days when we used to transport people away for heinous crimes, to Australia.
Oh yeah,
you know. Do you know what the minimum sentence for stealing a sheep was when you were convicted?
It was probably life in prison.
No, it? 7 years transportation.
Oh. 7 years transportation meaning what? 7 years to get there.
No, you were sent to Australia and you had to serve 7 years there after a 6 month journey.
Would they then bring you back then?
No, they just let you go.
Hmm.
Don't you remember in America when we used to go to some of those great restaurants down 2nd and 3rd Avenue?
Yeah.
And a lot of them used to have fantastic historical pictures on the walls of people who'd come from Australia and ended up as governor of Maryland and all that.
I don't remember that.
Not really.
Oh, no. I do. What I remember about going to dinner on 2nd Avenue was when you and I were there the most recent time.
Yeah.
When we were there to do our show at the City Winery.
Oh, yes.
And some old couple told you that I was making too much noise. Remember that?
It was
in a press box or somewhere.
They complained
that I was swearing.
Couple of whinges, yeah. That wasn't a great restaurant. That was a functional restaurant.
We've been on the lash, mind you, for about 24 hours.
I went to another one with
the hamburgers were good, though.
The hamburgers were very good. I went to another one with our friend Loren.
Oh, yeah.
And it was an Italian place down second. It was a beautiful restaurant, honestly, it really was. But then we went into what I'd call a more traditional diner, you know. Uh-huh. And it had, again, all these pictures of these squires and statesmen.
What, sort of pioneers?
Yeah, pioneers. And what happened was that when they let you go in Australia, you could choose to come back to this country, but conditions were appalling on the boats to get back, and a lot of them never made it and all that.
Also,
why
would you want to come back to a country where you've been
sent you away 7 years?
And also, that's the place where you've got your criminal record.
That's right.
Whereas if you went to America,
yes, that's right.
They would start afresh.
And you started a new life, and a lot of them did very, very well, and a lot of pioneers were there. But one of the strangest things was that you could get transported for 7 years, right, for the offence of, and I thought this might interest you because you keep going on about one of my tenants in one of my rented flats.
Uh-huh.
You could get done for impersonating an Egyptian.
Well, like the Egyptian doctor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could get done for 7 years, right?
How do you impersonate an Egyptian?
Well, you see, this is the point. So, of course, with my, you know...
Do you mean like an ancient Egyptian?
Well, I'm about to tell you.
Walk like an Egyptian?
No, with my probing mind.
Yeah.
My probing mind, right. Now, what nobody had worked out, which I have now, because I've researched this, okay?
Yeah.
Romani people first arrived in Britain about 500 years ago.
Right.
And so 200 or 300 years later, when they were transporting people, okay, the word gypsy came from Egyptian.
Yes, did it?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well,
the Romani people, I've always assumed, came from sort of Romania, right?
Well, the problem was, because there was no great ability to, you know, determine geography in those days, when people arrived and they had darker skin, everybody thought... Oh, excuse me, why are we playing music in the middle of this show?
Sorry, I was going to play Walk Like an Egyptian for you.
Oh, I see, that'd be quite nice. That was the all-girl band, wasn't it?
It was.
Walk like an Egyptian.
The Bangles.
Yeah, the Bangles. Yeah, I don't mind a bit of that if you want to. Yeah, because that's quite appropriate.
I'll give a bit of it. I'm just playing an advert beforehand,
okay,
so as soon as it's ready, I'll play it.
Yeah, just play it, and then I'll shut up for a minute, and then we'll listen to it, and I'll tell you the rest of the story, OK?
There you go.
It's a great start, that. Oh, I love that song.
It's a great song.
That crashing guitar.
It's a great song.
Yeah.
You can watch them as well.
Yeah. They were pretty exciting, weren't they, the old Bangles?
I think you quite like the Bangles.
Yeah, I think they were, yeah. That's very good. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Fair enough.
But do you know what? Do you remember a beautiful girl at the Express called Louise somebody with blonde hair? She ended up as a lot of them did, as the editor of... You know, one of the female magazines, like, you know, Vogue or something
not
like
Louise
that.
Louise Port.
No, it wasn't Louise Port. She was a lovely girl, long blonde hair, and she was a feature writer.
Yeah. I think I know who you mean. I can't remember her last name.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And when that record was out very popular, of course, I was a big shot, you know what I mean?
Were you?
And I said, why don't you do a feature on... And I wasn't even the features editor, but I was better than the features editor.
Why, well, of course, yeah, but why was she doing it that you told her?
Because it was an idea I had.
You
in the
were
pub.
After her, weren't you?
Yeah, I was actually. Yeah. She was a beautiful blonde girl, and she had a boyfriend.
You can't even remember her last name.
No, she had a boyfriend who was a dickhead. He was a student or something like that. Really? You know, he had no money. You know, he didn't even have a car actually. So I thought, you know, that she deserves.
So were you trying to sort of become overbearing and show her how much money you had?
No, not overbearing. But I thought, I thought genuinely, as she was a hard worker, getting on well in life, talented journalist, she deserved somebody better than this boyfriend.
And which magazine she had up editing then?
She did a column in a national newspaper saying, you know, I can't believe I can do it or something like that. And it wasn't Vogue, it wasn't as high powered as that, but it was something like, you know, Marie Claire or something like that. You know what I mean? Something like that. But anyway, so we're in the pub one night, and it was back in Old Fleet Street. So it was the...
You're not thinking of Louise Robinson, are you?
No, no, no. Her brother was Stephen Robinson off the Times. Now, I fell out with her because I said her brother was a dickhead.
Right.
Because he was a political writer. That's right, yeah. But, no, so we're having a sherbet one night, and I thought to demonstrate to her, you know, the extent of my talent, you know what I mean? Also, I was a news editor, looking at breaking stories every minute.
Right.
I said, have you heard that song by the Bangles?
You didn't used to go to people like that, by the way. I'm actually not just the news editor. Yeah. I'm the assistant editor of Brackets News.
Yeah, well, I was, actually.
I bet you did.
Well, I did,
Because
it
sounds better.
Yeah, but the truth of the matter is I was, so it wasn't any problem.
Well, I always had the rule, the shorter the title, the better, because the best title of a newspaper is editor. So it's not a fucking brackets you've got.
Anyway, so I said to Louise, I said, look, I've got a great idea. She said, what's that?
You're thinking of Louise Gannon?
Yeah, could be. No. Louise Gannon was married to the lad who became editor of the Punch magazine.
Yes, right. Yeah.
And he was very good. Yeah. He was a good lad. I put him on a show a couple of times. Yes, that's right. Yeah. James somebody. No, he wasn't. And by the way...
She was like a showbiz reporter.
Well, not only that, to this day, Louise is still writing top-class features in all the showbiz magazines with the top people in Hollywood. You know what I mean? No, she's great.
Okay.
No, I can't quite remember.
I'm just throwing out the Louise.
Sure. But anyway... I said, I've got a great idea for you. You know, she said, oh, what's that? You know, and I said, have you heard that song by the Bangles, Walk Like an Egyptian? Yeah. She said, oh, yeah. You know, I said, well, you know, the Egyptians have a very distinctive walk. That's why they made the song. She said, oh, what's it like? So I demonstrated this Egyptian walk. You know what I mean? You know, with that
I should say to the people listening to this that you're now doing it for me.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is not that bad, actually.
Yeah, one hand out the front, one hand out the back, and you sort of shimmy along like a, almost like a sort of a, you know,
like a snake.
A snake, that's right, yeah. And I said, why don't you go and find some famous people and get them to pose, you know, walking like an Egyptian. Now, this was before the days of video and all that, where you could actually make it work, couldn't you, in a video and all that.
Well, yeah, except that I'm just showing you the video they made for
That's
Walk
right.
Like an Egyptian.
That's right, yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah.
that was a genuine video.
No, but you couldn't take a phone out into the streets like we can now and ask people to imitate walking like an Egyptian, you know what I mean?
No, that's true.
Which we would then put onto Two Mikes TV or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
So,
by the way, if you want to sign up to Two Mikes TV, go to the Two Mikes. TV.
That's right, yeah, the Two Mikes TV. And you'll find it's a potpourri, as we said in one of our earlier podcasts.
Yeah.
But anyway, the point is, she said, oh, that's great. So she then went and found quite a few famous people who loved the idea, thought it was very funny.
Well, what sort of famous people?
Oh, you know, like a
Did you
a
have
pop
the
star.
Kind of Band on the Run album cover envisaged or something? Do you know how they're all standing there in the spotlight?
Yeah, sure.
And
no,
it looks like
I saw
away.
It as a sequence of separate pictures. You know, could you please pose the Walk Like an Egyptian, you know, and compare them all, you know? She said, oh, that's brilliant, you know. So
well, it's not brilliant, is it?
Well, I think it's pretty brilliant.
No, it's a shit idea.
So
I've never put that in the paper.
Well, it did go in the paper. You see, and this is the point. Now, what happened was, so next morning, you know, in her features conference, you know, the features editor, and she came up with this idea, and she said, yes, that's not bad, but then tried to steal it, of course, as her own idea. And the feature said it was Philippa Kennedy, before Philippa became the news editor. And so this was all going terribly well until they got all the prints in, because in those days it wasn't digital. You had to, you know, fix and dev the pictures and they laid them all out on a big board and said, now, these are great, you know, this is great, that's great. And Philippa turned to Louise and said, you know, this is great, well done for coming up with such an idea. She said, well, I have to be absolutely honest, Philippa, it wasn't actually mine. She said, what do you mean? She said, Mike Parry suggested it last night. Philippa hated me because I was the news editor and she no longer
was. Everybody hated you.
Anyway. Yeah. She said, oh, really? And then tried to have it thrown out the paper.
She kiboshed it.
Yeah. Except she didn't, because fortunately by then, a lot of other people, including the editor, had taken notice.
So was this like a spread then?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
It sounds awful.
Yeah. No, it was brilliant, honestly.
What was the headline?
Walk Like an Egyptian.
Right.
You know, because that was rocking it up the charts.
Can you remember any of the people who were in it, though?
Well, I think... I don't know.
Stringfellow?
Well, people like
all
that.
All the usual suspects.
People like that. That's
all the
that's
people
right.
you go to and go to mind.
Would you
like
mind posing like walking like an Egyptian? Yeah, because they all do it because they all love publicity, you know. And the Express was kind of a good newspaper in those days,
yes,
selling quite a lot of copies, you know.
It was.
But anyway, look, so let me get back to why we started talking about this in the first place.
Why did
okay?
we start talking about it?
Well,
oh, yeah, because about the impersonating an Egyptian.
You can get
how is the Egyptian doctor, by the way?
Oh, he's fine, thanks. As far as I know, I haven't seen him for
what's
a long time.
What sort of medicine does he practice?
Doesn't got much to do. He's a paediatrician.
Is he?
Yeah, children.
Okay.
Anyway, so when the first Romany people arrived in Britain 500 years ago, and you didn't, nobody knew anything about geography in those days. Nobody even knew that across the English Channel was a place called France.
Well, they did. It's just that they probably had to be quite well educated to know that.
So the dark-skinned travellers had arrived from Eastern Europe, and everybody said they must have come from Egypt because they got dark skins.
Right.
So they were then turned.
So why did they know Egypt then, if they didn't know anywhere else?
Because of the history of the Egyptian culture and empire
because
going back.
Because they'd been to the British Museum, maybe.
Exactly. There were museums in London which indicated that, you know, this great race and this great.
Have you ever been to the British Museum?
No.
I bet you. I'm going to knew you don't say that.
Why
don't you go?
Why?
Because it's a beautiful place. One, the building itself is magnificent.
I don't need teaching about anything.
Yes, you do.
No.
You need teaching about quite a lot of things.
Bollocks.
And also, you can go in and see real mummies.
Yeah, okay. Well, if you say so. I don't want to see a real mummy, actually. I find that quite gruesome. You
Would that give you the creeps?
A body wrapped up for like 2,500 years.
Yeah, but it's quite cool, though.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Very cool.
Anyway. The word Egyptian gradually became corrupted to gypsy.
Ah.
A chap called Samuel Ridd, in The Art of Juggling in 1586, identified the 1520s as the time when gypsies, who had formerly been called Egyptians, first came to these shores. Mm. He also says that what happened eventually was that the people who came here, the Romanies, who then were called Egyptians, but then became known as gypsies, right, started off well in this country, but then became ostracised and were picked upon by the authorities.
Because of the colour of their skin.
Colour of the skin.
Mm.
So then they were called vagrants.
Racism, basically. It was early stage racism.
You're absolutely right. They were often accused of dishonesty in horse trading, begging, theft, fortune-telling and forgery.
Yeah.
And the Romani lost their status of exotic travelling folk and became vagrants.
Yeah.
So what went on the statute book was, if you live your life like a vagrant, an Egyptian, you will be sentenced to 7 years transportation.
What, and sent to Australia?
And sent to Australia.
So is that what happened?
So that's why on the statute book, if you impersonated an Egyptian, you could be sent away for 7 years.
Oh, right.
Disgraceful.
Well, I guess if you didn't want to be sent away, you wouldn't be impersonating an Egyptian, would you?
Well, no, but the thing is, you could
see,
be...
See, if only you'd known all this when you did that ridiculous spread about walking like an Egyptian,
you could
add a little historical panel on it.
Yeah, but the way the crime was written down in the statute book was, the crime was anyone committing vagrancy, i.e. impersonating the lifestyle of an Egyptian, is at risk of serious punishment.
Does it not show you how
wrong
people could be in historical terms?
Absolutely disgraceful,
you know,
isn't it?
I mean, you hear people say all the time nowadays that, you know, we should be ashamed of some of the things that happened in the past.
Yes.
I'm not one of those people that particularly goes on about that.
No.
However, when you hear something like that, that's awful, isn't it?
It is.
It's just incredibly unfair.
Absolutely awful. But, I mean, of course, you could also get transported for 7 years for kicking Hammersmith Bridge.
Yes.
You could also get transported 7 years for parading sheep through London without a permit.
Mind you, do you know about
this
new...
Life is very brutal.
Do you know about this new development, which I came across the other week?
What's
it? And it turns out that a load of local authorities now have been given the authority, if you'll pardon the phrase, to pass all kinds of new laws, which are all around kind of nuisance, right? So, for example, they can decide, they've got more and more wardens collecting more and more money by giving you these on-the-spot fines, right? So you can be fined for being a nuisance in whatever way they think you're being a nuisance. For example, they can do for swearing.
That sounds like a medieval crime.
Yeah, they can do. They can do you for making too much noise in your apartment.
Yeah,
they can do you for feeding the pigeons when you're not supposed to do it.
Absolutely disgraceful.
And nobody understands how this happened.
Absolutely
but we are now living under a sort of state of siege, basically, by these maniacs in local councils who've been running out of money every single day of the week that they're operational, and they're trying to take money from you and me and everybody else they can get money from. You know how much they're going to make from parking this year? 900 million quid.
That's right.
From parking.
But that is all Gordon Brown's fault.
Well, it's not Gordon Brown's fault.
I've blamed a lot of things on Gordon Brown, and I still will.
Gordon Brown is no longer there, so Gordon Brown can't be blamed for this.
No, no, let me tell you this. When Gordon Brown became the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Tony Blair very cleverly said, we're not going to start ramping taxes immediately because we've just got in.
Right.
Let's get through the first term. Then in the second term, you can start turning the screw.
But also they didn't want to be known as the party of high tax.
That's right, exactly. In fact, I think they cut tax, income tax by a penny in the pound first budget.
Yeah.
But anyway, he then went right down the duplicitous route of stealth taxes.
Yeah.
First thing he did was start charging dividends on pension. Sorry, started charging tax on dividends from pension funds, which were massive, which cut everybody's pension by 40% overnight.
Right.
I mean, it was an outrage. But the next thing he did was, he said, I tell you what we'll do, because the amount of money that central government sends to local governments is huge.
Yeah.
It's a huge part of the burden of
taxation. It's where they get all the money from, effectively.
Exactly. So he got all these people together and said, look, I tell you what, we'll cut the money we send to local authorities, but give local authorities new powers.
Fundraising powers.
New fundraising powers to raise as much as they want. Mm. And for instance, outside my place in those days, where I lived in another place in Stockbroker Belt, Surrey, right?
A different place.
A different place, yeah. The charge of 50p a day to park your car, because it was close to a station, went up to £3.50 a day.
Right.
And that happened right across the country.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, local authorities thought, this is brilliant.
Yeah.
And so where they used to charge you £15 to remove garden rubbish once a summer and all that, it became £250.
Well, the garden rubbish one is an interesting one, because in some places they started the garden rubbish scheme, right, because they thought this will be helpful to the environment.
Yeah.
And they started doing it for nothing, right?
Yeah.
They did it for a couple of years.
That's
then after the third year, they came back and said, now we're going to charge you a tenner. Or now we're going to charge you 30 quid.
We're
going to charge you 70 quid.
Much more.
I mean, I was saying this to somebody the other day.
Yeah.
It's like me giving you something for nothing.
That's right.
For 2 years, right?
That's
Every time I see you, I hand you a free book.
That's right.
But then on the third year I see you, I say, actually, I want to give you another free book, but this time you have to pay me 30 quid.
That's right.
It's ridiculous.
All sorts of things. For instance, local authorities were told, well, look, you know, there's a lot of rented property in your borough.
Yeah.
So why don't you start charging those greedy landlords £50 a time to test their electricity and gas meters every year?
Yeah.
Well, why? Because they've only been there two or three
years.
Health
and safety.
Yeah, health and safety. Yeah. We'll test them every year.
Mm.
And then it was the roof tax, you know, test the roofs, they're not leaking. Or it was outrageous.
Yeah.
And that all came from Gordon Brown.
Uh-huh.
Gordon Brown was the greatest exponent of tax and spend that any chancellor we've ever had in the modern era, but pretended that he wasn't.
Right.
But he was. He loved spending other people's money.
Well, he pretended he was the friend of big business.
He pretended he was
part of the New Labour project.
But
in fact,
he
was actually quite left-wing.
He was very left-wing. I mean, Gordon Brown's never had a proper job.
No.
Gordon Brown grew up, you know, as a son of the manse.
Yeah.
Went to university, came out, became a political researcher, the same office as Tony Blair.
Right.
Then told everybody that, you know, I would be the next leader of the Labour Party after John Smith.
Yeah.
John Smith dies overnight after coming away from a late cocktail party, because John Smith liked a few sherbets.
He did.
Which does not make him a bad person.
Doesn't make him a bad person. Massive heart attack.
Massive heart attack. Peter Mandelson and Alistair Campbell then moved into gear, went round to see Gordon and said, Gordon, you are an ugly Scotsman and Tony Blair is a very attractive Englishman.
Yeah.
So we think it'd be better if you switch roles.
Yeah.
And Gordon Brown said, I've tutored Tony Blair in his political career for the last 5 years. If you now expect me to stand aside and let this whippersnapper take the role I was born for, you are mad.
And then they said, well, don't worry, we'll give you the third term.
Exactly.
But then they didn't.
No, no, that's absolutely right. In the end, he was forced to stand down.
What a shambles.
And then, of course, that famous meeting in that famous restaurant in Islington.
The Granita,
Was it Granita?
Yeah, in Islington.
And where he went in and finally, Tony Blair said, look, Gordon, I'll let you have control of the whole economy.
Yeah.
And that wrecked Blair's future.
Yeah.
Because Blair could get away with that for 2 years.
Mm.
Because you know what he was doing? He was spending huge amounts of surplus money, which had been built up during the Thatcher and Major years.
Right.
Because they ran the economy on a very, very tight budget, you know. So
mind you, the major years hadn't gone that well economically, had they? Because there was Black Monday, Black Wednesday, Black Friday.
Yeah, but they never...
The good thing was there wasn't a Black Tuesday or Thursday.
They never had huge deficits. Yeah. And then, of course, Brown got in and became Prime Minister and just completely opened the sluice gates to spending.
Right.
And that's a lot of the reason why we're here where we are today in the financial pickle we're in. A lot of people will disagree with what I've just said.
Yeah.
A lot of people will say you've got that all wrong.
Yeah.
It wasn't Gordon Brown's fault. It was the fault of the international bankers and largely based in America who completely tried to screw everybody and the system and got it wrong.
No, but Gordon Brown was in complicit in all of that.
Of course
because
he
was the one that wanted to make Britain the absolute centre of the financial world. He wanted London to be the financial centre of the world. And so he gave all sorts of promises.
Of course he did.
He gave all sorts of breaks to all the big banks.
Yeah.
And he allowed the banks alone to expand in such a way that they were no longer regulated.
Of course he did. And Northern Rock he never spotted and all that
collapse. All of the subprime business and all the subprime mortgages that were given out.
Yeah.
Many of those, despite the fact they're in America, were being handed out by British banks.
Oh, Fred the Shred, right? Was his favourite friend. He used to turn up at Downing Street and say, don't worry.
At RBS.
Yeah, and but the other reason, a lot of what you said is right, of course it is, but also Gordon Brown thought, if the banking industry in London becomes the most successful in the world, I'll be taking in billions and billions and billions of corporation tax for that. That's another reason why we're going to do it here.
Yeah.
And got it all completely wrong.
He did get it all completely wrong. It's quite staggering.
Mm.
We're out of time, pretty much.
Okay, well, we've put the world right.
We have put the world to rights. We're the two mics. We'll be back soon.
No, it wasn't Louise Port. She was a lovely girl, long blonde hair, and she was a feature writer.
Yeah. I think I know who you mean. I can't remember her last name.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And when that record was out very popular, of course, I was a big shot, you know what I mean?
Were you?
And I said, why don't you do a feature on... And I wasn't even the features editor, but I was better than the features editor.
Why was she doing it that you told her?
Because it was an idea I had.
You
in
the
were
pub. After her, weren't you?
Yeah, I was actually. Yeah. She was a beautiful blonde girl, and she had a boyfriend.
You can't even remember her last name.
No, she had a boyfriend who was a dickhead. He was a student or something like that.
Really?
You know, he had no money. You know, he didn't even have a car actually. So I thought, you know, that she deserves.
So were you trying to sort of become overbearing and show her how much money you had?
No, not overbearing, but I thought genuinely, as she was a hard worker, getting on well in life, talented journalist, she deserved somebody better than this boyfriend.
And which magazine she had a editing then?
She did a column in a national newspaper saying, you know, I can't believe I can do it or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't Vogue, it wasn't as high powered as that, but it was something like, you know, Marie Claire or something like that. You know what I mean? Something like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we're in the pub one night and it was back in Old Fleet Street. Mm. So it was the...
You're not thinking of Louise Robinson, are you?
No. Her brother was Stephen Robinson off the Times.
Yeah.
Now, I fell out with her because I said her brother was a dickhead.
Right.
Because he was a political writer. That's right, yeah. She was about 16 as well. So
did
anyway,
you fancy her? Did you fancy her?
Oh yeah, absolutely did. Yeah she's beautiful.
Right.
Yeah, she was the woman of my dreams.
Really?
Yeah, and that's been ever since.
Why didn't you try to pinch her from him?
Well, because I was only 14, he was 16.
Yeah, she's not really cool, is it?
Smash me in the face or something, you know. When I first started buying beer, right, when I was about sort of 15 or 16.
You were about 7.
No, not when I was 7. That was when I used to drink baby sham at weddings, family weddings, you know.